Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Joe McGranahan.
Thank you, and welcome back on board On the Mark. It's a Tuesday in the Valley. There's going to be a cold one, chance of a flurry here or there, I guess. But we're going to warm things up today with a hot conversation. The hotlines are open, 570-743-9565. Email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236. But be sure to include the keyword OTM at the start of your message. On the Mark is brought to you by the Sunbury Motor Company, a family-owned dealership since 1915. Their North 4th Street Ford dealership in Sunbury and the Kia dealerships on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf are indeed the preferred dealerships here in the central Susquehanna Valley. They cordially invite you to find out more about the great options they always offer when you purchase your next vehicle. They have an extensive inventory selection of new and used vehicles from Ford, Hyundai, and Kia. Their dealership team is ready to help you get the vehicle that's just the right fit for you. They have plenty of experience and knowledge to share, and they take pride in helping all of their customers find just the right vehicle. Their commitment to you, their customer, includes offering great finance options. Elmer Fudd? Great finance options. And they're serving you with their wonderful technicians and service teams from their large truck, body, and alignment shops, plus their repair garage for all types of vehicles. They're a master towing service, second to none, with decades of experience. Learn more about Sunbury Motor Company at sunburymotors.com. All right, on yesterday's program, we had a number of things that we didn't get to finish, some comments. The texts, we were talking about Biden and Trump and all the stuff going on with the election. One of our texters says, Chris, so Biden didn't have money until he became vice president? That tells me everything I need to know about Biden. He's corrupt. Another one responding to Chris says, Chris, you're showing a serious case of Trump derangement syndrome. Got to be convicted before a pardon can be given. Trump hasn't been convicted. And then why would the January 6th committee destroy government records, as in depositions and testimony taken when the committee was shut down? All right, why would they? And in regards to January 6th, why would the committee hide evidence Trump offered the National Guard before that day, and Bowser and Pelosi both turned it down? Okay, so those are the texts that we had from yesterday that we didn't get to. And did we have an email out there? Well, from the day before, we talked about the military number being replaced by the Social Security number. And one of our callers, Dick, who had been in the military, doubted that that was true. But he wrote back and said, basic field manual, rules of land warfare, name, rank, serial number, classic response under interrogation, anyone captured during war. In what world would you want your Social Security, 1969 into the 2000s, replaced a military ID number? In today's day and age, your Social Security number is used for hacking various accounts. I apologize for not knowing or even thinking this stupid idea became reality. Dick, I'm inclined to agree with you. It doesn't seem to me like giving your Social Security number would be a reasonable thing to do. All right, the big news overnight is the Supreme Court yesterday heard some arguments, and we'll get to some details on that, about the different companies being able to influence, the government being able to influence different companies on the internet to take down comments the government didn't like. That's a big one, and the fact that Donald Trump doesn't apparently have enough money, despite testifying he had $400 million available to get himself out of his current legal predicament. Stanley, you're on the mark from Danville. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. So it appears that the diversity hire on the Supreme Court, Ms. Justice Brown, is concerned that the First Amendment will prevent the government from restricting speech as far as disinformation and blah, blah, that stuff, you know, disinformation, malinformation, whatever you want to call it.
Well, she
that's basically what she said.
She's raised some eyebrows. She appears to be saying that she believes that states' views would prevent the government from explaining its facts or positions to the social media companies when there's some danger of imminent threat. You know, but on the other hand, where does that line exist? Where is their right to talk to them about it, you know, say we're concerned, and where does it become intimidation? That's the line, and I think Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson apparently is drawing that line pretty close to the government side.
Right, and I guess she hasn't read the First Amendment. You know, and who's to determine what is malinformation or misinformation? Who's determining that?
Well, that's a good question. I think it depends on your view of the facts. How many times...
Bingo.
This whole program is based on the fact that people have differing opinions and they want a chance to express them. You know, so not everybody is going to buy the same can of worms, if you will.
Well, and that's why the First Amendment was put in place. And the Second Amendment was put in place to protect the First Amendment. Ah, so there we are. So we have a Supreme Court justice that doesn't think that the people should be able to say what they need to say or want to say. That's what it appears to be. And she thinks the government should be able to stop them if they want to. That's the problem.
Well, she said...
That's going down a really long, bad slope.
Well, what she said was that this really would hurt the government's ability to influence things. And I heard a lot of reporters say that's exactly the point. The First Amendment is designed to stop the government from interfering with free speech.
Isn't that called propaganda?
What, free speech? Or you mean the government?
No, the government influencing things.
Well, you know, come on, let's be honest about it. The government has an obligation to protect us. If they see something they honestly believe is a threat, I want them to be able to say it. But I don't want them to be able to rule other people out from saying exactly the opposite.
Well, a threat in what way, Joe? Somebody said some words?
Well, health. Let's take a health emergency. Let's take the pandemic, for example.
Oh, yeah, let's take the pandemic.
Let's take the pandemic, for example. So the government believes that wearing a mask, they have experts who say wearing a mask is good and it will probably save lives. All right, I have no problem with them saying to the media companies, listen, our experts have told us this. You know, we'd appreciate you, giving us some time to talk about that or making sure our side's presented. But when they find out there are other people who say, hey, these masks are bad, we're breathing in germs all over ourselves, they shouldn't stop those people from saying what they want to say, too. And that's exactly what the federal government did.
Well, and speaking of COVID and the response to it, you know, Miss Debbie Birx wrote a book about her role in this because she was the response coordinator for COVID. It's something along those lines. That was her title.
Oh.
So she was supposed to come up with a response to, quote, protect people from COVID, correct?
Well, if that was her job, I guess that would have been her responsibility.
She wrote a book, and I heard some excerpts out of that book today, read word for word, that she basically put down that she thought we needed to shut things down and sent, you know, in a paper report that she sent to the president and the other people in the, you know, the people that make the decisions, and they changed things and worked it out and said, no, this isn't going to be good. You know, they edited her report and gave it back to her. So all she did was they just moved things, the words around, and they still were in the report, just different spots, and they reworded things a little bit to get the same effect, and then submitted it back to the president, and then it was pretty much okay. So she basically said she used subterfuge, lies, and deceit to get what she wanted. Now, is that who we want running things like the pandemic response?
Well, you know, I would say, what was her motive? I mean, was she just on a power trip, or did she actually believe that she was helping people?
Well, she didn't know. See, the first, and this was, I came out of this too, you know, the first 15 days to stop the spread, correct? That's what we were all told.
Right, and that was under President Trump. We're going to stop flattening out the curve.
And she's the one that was the author of that, the instigator of that, okay? And she got that in because she knew she couldn't get any longer because she was looking at the Italian, you know, what they were doing in Italy because of the, you know, the people from Wuhan, China were coming into Italy because Chinese had bought up all the garment factories and the design houses there, and it was being staffed by a lot of Chinese, and they were bringing the the Wu Flu with them. Okay, so they shut things down. So she was looking at that model, and she said, well, we can't get away with that. So she said 15 days to spread, to stop the spread, but she didn't have any facts to back it up.
Well, let's take another example. Let's take Hunter Biden's laptop.
So she needed 2 weeks to back it up.
Okay, let's take Hunter Biden's laptop. We were all told it bore all the earmarks of Russian disinformation.
According
to the administration at the time. And so they wanted to stop that from being publicized. That was absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. No question in my mind, they should have never been allowed to shut anybody up about Hunter Biden's laptop, and probably not anything about the pandemic either. But there's entirely different. Nobody's going to be physically harmed because they didn't believe in Hunter Biden's laptop. But people could be physically harmed if they didn't follow good advice about a health emergency.
Well, it would be great if it was good advice, wouldn't it?
Well, who's to determine it wasn't? I mean, we still are debating that. We're debating that 3 years later. All right, go ahead.
World's deadliest virus is out there killing millions of people. Okay, that's what we were told, correct?
Right.
Okay, so you put on a paper mask, and that's going to save the world and protect everybody. That's what we were told, correct?
Well, I think we were told that
cover your face.
It will protect them. It will protect somebody else from us breathing on them.
Yeah, and then it was take the vax. It'll protect you. It'll stop the spread at you. It will prevent you from getting COVID, and you won't be able to spread it. Another lie.
Okay.
Tired of being lied to, Joe.
All right, we'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
Well, the people that, quote, are in charge tend to be lying to you. As far as Hunter's laptop, that lie that it was Russian disinformation was started by Anthony Blinken in a Biden campaign going to his buddies in a deep state intelligence agency saying, you need to get on board with this, saying it's Russian disinformation. That's been proven, so that's why another lie. Okay. You all have a great day.
All right. You too, Stan.
Enjoy the lousy weather.
First day of spring, buddy. Have a good one. Take care.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, tonight. I think it comes in this evening. Okay?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Whoopee.
All right. Bye. Thanks a lot. Bye. Okay, Eric, you're on the mark. Good morning, sir. Hello, Eric. Earth to Eric. Eric? Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Where were you?
I was told I was third in line.
I'm sorry. I must have cut somebody down. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Uh-oh, bad mark against you. I'm going to take an opinion you'll probably be surprised with this morning, Joe.
Okay.
But so what I hear on the news, there was a proposal by the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, that Speaker, who is a Democrat, proposal change in our election laws to allow people to register to vote and vote the same day.
Right, I heard that.
I disagree with that. I believe that it puts too much on the local workers, I believe, to be the ones to certify that. I know the ones who work down here in Union Township, and those ladies and gentlemen do a wonderful job volunteering, but to put the onus and the responsibility upon them to certify someone at the same time trying to make sure that the election goes correctly and everything, it's just too much. It's too much. I think it does open the door to, if not fraud, but the accusation of fraud. So I think as American citizens, we have rights, but we have responsibilities. One of the responsibilities is to register to vote ahead of time so you can be certified and everything can be set. So then those election workers who are not professionals, I'm not sure. Do they even get paid, Joe? Do they get a little stipend or something? I'm not even sure about that.
I'm not sure either.
Okay. If they get paid, it's not much, right? And they're simply there because they're dedicated people who want to make sure our elections carry on, and obviously we can't hire all these people to work, a couple of days a year.
No, I think that, that back. I think they do get paid.
A little stipend or something, but it's not much,
not
right?
Much.
I
mean, not considering you have to spend the whole day there.
Right, yeah, and I think they also have to be elected, too. I think they're elected officials, but, that's not the point. The point is that, I disagree with that. And I'll get back to the rights and responsibilities part. We have right to vote here in the United States and in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but with that right comes responsibility, and that means if you want to register to vote, or if you have moved and you change where you're voting and so forth, then you know, be responsible. Be a responsible citizen. Take that responsibility on yourself. Register. I encourage everyone to register. You know, I think I first registered to vote at the same time, 1980, where I had to register for the draft. Right? it was you know, that's when President. I'm sorry. Yeah, 1981. I apologize. That all of those of 18 or older had registered for the draft again. And me and a bunch of the guys from when I was junior out of college at the time went down to the local post office and, you know, registered for the draft. At the same time, we registered to vote. And I've been obviously registered ever since that time. But so that's something I imagine you would have the same point, that having same day registration to vote as day you vote is not a good idea.
Well, there's no way to verify anything about you on that same day, really.
Well, you would have your ID, you would have your driver's license,
well,
or whatever.
And no, nobody
then,
ever had a nobody
what about dispute. And what about, hey, you can't read it or whatever?
Well, nobody ever had
too much responsibility.
Nobody ever had a fake driver's license, of course.
Are you trying to admit something, Joseph?
No, I'm just saying I know a lot.
We just had the paper in here in Pennsylvania rather than the photo ID.
A lot of college kids would have a driver's license indicating they're 21 when they aren't. I mean, that's been done. I just think that voting is certainly a privilege, and you know there should be a minimum of restrictions to it. We want to make sure that everybody who wants to vote can vote, but on the other hand, we have an obligation to the fairness of elections to make sure that only those people vote who are legally qualified to vote. And if that requires, we've gone over this up and down several times in this program, if that requires a photo ID, I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah. And again, so I agree with that, but we just have to make it maybe somewhat easier for those who live in urban areas who wouldn't normally have a driver's license because use public transportation to make sure they can obtain those IDs in a efficient manner.
Not everything is easy in life.
What have you heard? Go ahead, Joe.
And not everything is easy in life, Eric. Sometimes things you want to do are complicated, and they require a complicated set of actions. I don't see anything wrong with it. If you really want to vote, how big of an imposition is it for you to go to some place and get a registration form or a photo ID? The state makes them available. I mean, if you really want to vote, get what you need to do to vote.
The question I have, Joe, is how many photo license centers are there in downtown Philadelphia or in the urban areas of Philadelphia where people don't drive?
Well, I would suspect there are quite a few. The state puts them up there. And you know,
I think it's more of the demand. I don't believe there are tons and tons for the number of people who live in that area.
Well,
where would the demand be when So if you have in the urban areas of Philadelphia, you think the Commonwealth has purchased property and puts a photo ID or a driver's testing area there where no one essentially drives much?
I hate to tell you, but people in Philadelphia do sure as hell drive because I've been on the Schuylkill Expressway. All right, we'll give you the last word.
Not much around here.
We'll give you the last word. Give you the last word, Eric. Go ahead. Finish up.
Okay. I think we're in agreement, Joe, and mark that down here.
Doesn't happen often.
You know, with the right to vote, responsibility comes with rights, comes with responsibilities as well.
Fair enough. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Joe.
Take
thank
care,
you.
Eric. Thanks for calling. Okay. Bob, you're on the mark. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. I was... of course, I went to Shikellamy School District, and of course, Mr. Ely was one of my teachers. And one of the things that he taught us in civics was, you know, if you don't vote, don't complain. So I started to vote when I was 18. But anyhow, what I wanted to say about I think it was within the last 2 weeks at Susquehanna University, there was a question and answer a seminar on democracy needs journalism. And it got into, just basic facts and basic news stories and all that. And so I compliment you and WKOK for all these years of the free. In fact, I worked for WKOK at one time. But the free speech is the media, and we still have that in this country.
Well, we sure do. And we'll let's hope we hang on to it, Bob. Thanks for your comment. Okay, Chris, you're next up. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We have another call coming in, but we'll be back with more of On the Mark right after this.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I...
just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
To prove that mobile from Pentel and Data Business Voice brings the office everywhere you are, I'm going to connect with my team while falling 15,000 feet.
We're here, boss. We hear you loud and clear.
Thanks, Janice. You know, companies today need affordable cloud-based unlimited calling, conferencing, mobile synergy, and easy upgrades to grow with your business to keep you, well, truly mobile.
Pentel Data Business Voice. Anywhere you are.
Janice?
Yeah, boss?
Yeah, I'm gonna need a little help.
It's time to put your best foot forward for some warm weather fun. First, visit Mifflinburg Variety, your family footwear store. They have all the popular names like New Balance, Saucony, Wolverine, Timberland Pro, Under Armour, and plenty more. Mifflinburg Variety has all the equipment you need for outdoor fun like camping, fishing and hunting gear, and sporting equipment from Outdoor Research, Marmot, Remington, and Winchester. There's kitchen and household items by Cuisinart and Hamilton Beach. Plus, they carry toys and gifts by Melissa and Doug, Ertl, and lots more. All at Mifflinburg Variety, your family's variety store. In the Buffalo Valley Shopping Center, Mifflinburg.
Hi, everybody. Steve Jones. Chris Wheeler joins us today. 1 to 3. News Radio 1070 WKOK.
How about that? Chris Wheeler is joining that program. And we have Chris from Milton joining ours. Good morning, Chris. You're on the mark.
Yeah, how you doing?
Well, thank you. And you?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad to see that Trump is getting his old chum back in his old job. Paul Manafort.
Right about
it. Back to head the campaign again.
Well, so?
Well, he was convicted of several things. And he's a convicted felon. So that's the kind of guy you want running your campaign, I guess.
Hey, if he
and
knows
he
how to get you elected.
Also the main connection to Russia relative to coordinating Russian interference in our campaign.
And when was that?
And when he was unregistered supporter of supposedly Ukraine, but he was actually working for the Russians who controlled Ukraine at the time. And he was draining the money out of Ukraine into Russia with the complicity of the billionaire class of Russia.
Okay.
So that does well. And then the one thing he wanted changed, he was also broke at the time, by the way, and he's taking the job for free because he was in debt to the Russians controlling Ukraine.
Well, you know, he's not just you say about Donald Trump, but he's headed campaigns. He's been involved with campaigns of Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bob Dole. So it's not like he's someone with no experience. Maybe he has some baggage, but he obviously knows how to get people elected.
And a very pro-Russian baggage at that, hasn't he?
All right. Well, that's Joe Biden's got pro-China baggage.
And he also wasn't a convicted felon when he was doing. I don't think he was a convicted felon when any of those people hired him. And he was working for Ukraine as one of the things he got convicted for.
Now he's also working for Ferdinand Marcos. So, and Mobutu Sese Seko from Congo? Forget. Zaire. So, I mean, he's got international connections. So what?
Well, if you call coordinating the campaign of Russian interference with Trump's campaign, I suppose you're in favor of that.
Well, I think he's got a right to pick whomever he wants to run his campaign.
Didn't say he didn't have a right, but I think you have a right to judge that pick, too, which you are trying, again, not to do.
No, I'm just saying, if the guy's not doing anything illegal, if he's paid his debt to society, how long do we...
He was pardoned by Trump. He didn't pay the debt, except he'd probably still be in jail if it wasn't for Trump's pardon or commutation of the sentence.
All right, well, they're two entirely different things.
Other things that Trump made him immune from.
A pardon takes away the conviction. A commutation of the sentence doesn't. It just gets you out of jail now. So
but
there's
it
a
also
difference.
Doesn't mean you weren't a convicted felon.
No, he's a convicted felon. No argument about that. He is. But if he's not doing anything illegal...
So
if
that makes him illegal.
Well, no, it doesn't.
In your language, then. Right?
Well, okay. Not if he's not doing anything now that's illegal. If he has... Whether you like it or not, he has paid some kind of a debt to society. He's either been pardoned, he's had his sentence commuted, he's still a convicted felon. But if he's not doing anything illegal right now, doesn't he have a right to earn a living?
I
mean, you liberals,
right? Yes.
You liberals want
to
let everybody out
right
of jail.
To earn a living.
You want to let everybody out of jail in Philadelphia. All the liberals want to let everybody out. We don't want to prosecute anybody. So what's the difference?
Oh, well, I guess you don't see any difference then between a petty domestic criminal and somebody who's selling the country out.
What's a petty domestic criminal doesn't beat cops up in the New York City subways?
Oh, I suppose that's true, but you have to be careful who you're talking about there, because as I pointed out, the one guy that the Republican, the Fox News and everybody went off on turned out to be innocent.
Well, you know, that's the other side of the coin. I agree, Chris, that we have a responsibility to find out whether somebody truly is guilty. And in Manafort's case, he was convicted. That makes him guilty.
And then look at all the people who were convicted under Trump. That isn't that signs of a corrupt person?
Is it a sign of a corrupt person that, for example, on his way out the door, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton pardoned a lot of controversial people? You know, Trump's not the only one who's made some controversial...
They didn't pardon people to protect themselves from their testimony. They didn't tell the people that... They didn't pardon the people that they were in cahoots with.
Well, if Manafort felt badly about not being able to testify, he could have done so on his own. Nothing stopped him from doing it.
Testify.
Right. Yeah, as a citizen, if I have information I think the government should know, I can go to the government and say, hey, I'm willing to testify. The fact that I've been pardoned or my sentence has been commuted doesn't enter into it. If I want to testify and I have relevant information, I'm sure they'd be happy to let me testify. On the other hand, if I don't
want
to...
What's that got to do with anything? I literally lost me there.
Well, you brought it up. You said that he was pardoned to keep him from testifying. My point is, nothing stops him from testifying whether he was pardoned or his sentence commuted was or not.
Yeah. Who's his meal ticket, Joe?
Well, that's I'm just saying, if
who's
he wanted
meal
to testify.
Ticket, Joe?
All right, who's Hunter Biden's meal ticket? Would he testify? Would he show up and testify against the Ukrainian Burisma? You know, we all have self-interest. I'm just saying nothing stopped him.
I think you're misapplying comparisons there.
I'm just saying nothing stopped him, Chris. Nothing stopped him. No one gave him a pardon in return for a written guarantee he wouldn't testify.
No, he did not want to testify because he would be incriminating himself and be incriminating Trump, probably.
Okay, well, we'll give you the last word. I'll shut up.
Okay,
you go ahead and finish.
Okay, well, one thing about Stan yesterday, he talked about the Antifa people that were, he had film of them, he saw film of them dressing up as Trump supporters or something. There's no such thing. If he has, get down to his local FBI office and report it. It's all a bunch of baloney. He chooses to believe what he wants to believe, and that's all there is to that.
How do you dress up
no
as a Trump
truth
supporter?
In it whatsoever.
How do you
Bye.
Dress? Hey, Chris, how do you what? Dress up? How do you dress up as a Trump supporter? I'm curious.
I don't know, but okay. That's sort of what he was claiming. He said there were Antifa people dressed up as Trump supporters. Oh. I believe that's what he said yesterday. They infiltrated the crowd.
I don't remember
and
that.
He'd seen film of them doing it. So you ask him that. I don't know why you didn't when he said it.
Okay, well.
That's why I mention it now. So maybe you will next time.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate your call as always,
You're
sir.
Welcome.
Take care. Have a good one, buddy. Okay. 570-743-9565 is our hotline number. And let's see, who's next up? There it's Joe from Sunbury, and I've got a tone here I can't get rid of. Okay, there we go. I have to on, drop there.
Are we in?
Yep, you're on, Joe. Go ahead.
My
on?
Okay. Yeah, there's a little bit of a... Okay. So, not my real concern, but I did want to... I listened to Chris, and he seemed... The oracle of Milton didn't make much sense this morning, but I think he was trying to snare you in some kind of statement that, and because you made the statement the other day that you called the murderer of Lincoln, Riley...
Lakin, not Lincoln.
Lakin, I'm saying Lakin. I probably can't tell the distinction on the phone, but yes, I do know her name as opposed to the President of the United States.
Right.
I know it's Lakin. Yeah, so you had mentioned that her murderer was an illegal alien, and he took umbrage to that, and I think he was trying to somehow get you trapped in that. But anyhow, I want to move on to... I did cut in on... got in when Stan was calling. I didn't get the very beginning of your show. But I was kind of interested in the Supreme Court hearing yesterday and the opening statement. And the lawyer for the government, I'll say, to make it simple, his opening statement, or might have been two sentences, kind of encapsulates the whole thing. And his statement was, the government may not use coercive threats to suppress speech, but can speak for itself by informing, persuading, or criticizing private speakers. Then it's period. Then his reference to this, which they're using an old 1963 Bantam Books case, should be about the fundamental distinction between persuasion and coercion. And
right.
I think you and Stan were trying to figure out the difference, and that's what the whole case is going to be about, is that the court does agree that the government has its rights for those types of things, but the threat, which the group from Missouri, their name is Murthy, right? The other side is the individual against Murthy against Missouri. Murthy, that lawyer said that it's plain, or it should be taken into consideration when the government agents or the White House itself contacted, say, Facebook. They didn't exactly say, but we have these hammers or these laws that we can bring against you if you don't cooperate, and that's the problem. I'm probably not making my point real well right now, but that's the difference between what the government can do on Facebook is, like, try to give their point of view, which I'm not even... Facebook and that's relatively new from the 1990s, that law, that Section 230 is, like, from the mid-90s because of the Internet. It's not been around that long.
No, it hasn't.
Right. Okay, so the idea is that the government overstepped its boundaries by, first, not that they couldn't declare an emergency because of COVID. That's given. But when they went to suppress, and they only used one case because the Supreme Court wants to narrow it down to the finest point that it can, and the two courts that heard this case earlier have determined that the facts are that the government overstepped its bounds. But then if any of the discussion, I think there was a little discussion about that the Supreme Court and the government itself will not contest the facts of the other two, that, and the Supreme Court definitely is not a fact-finding court. It will listen to the arguments that are before it now.
Right.
So it has to do with, did the government use threats? And Facebook, I think it was Zuckerberg said when he was being in a discussion
in Britain with I think it was a former prime minister, someone high up, that he said that the FBI definitely took stuff down because the FBI threatened them. Now, when you have testimony like that, I think this is going to be split pretty well on the nine justices. I think it might be 5-4 one way or the other. I'm not good at that kind of stuff, that's for sure, guessing that. But that's to maybe bring a little clarification is the exact issue that they're trying to, one side is trying to prove and the other side is trying to deny.
Let's be honest about that. If somebody approaches you from the government, somebody in an official capacity, somebody from the FBI or somebody from Homeland Security, and says to you, hey, we really think you ought to take this down because we're worried about it, I think there's an implied threat right there.
Right, and that I think that was covered, if not in the direct, I forget the lawyer's name for Murthy, but if he didn't say that, I think he did actually say it. I mean, it was, it's not all that long, but I may have forgotten. But it was covered by other people that on the news later that said the exact same thing that you're saying, right, that if you do that, if the FBI comes knocking, you're worried, or if the Secret Service comes knocking to your door, you're not, and someone said, well, you're not there like, oh, good, the government's here to help me. You're worried what, you're going to end up in jail, kind of like some of the people that Chris was talking about, some of the defendants that the government accused that had worked for Trump. And it's easy enough to do. And, you charge them, overcharge people like that, then they have to plead down. There's very few people can do what Donald Trump is doing, fight the federal government, because even the four or five that have pleaded in the, I mean, Tom likes to make a big deal about the four or five that pleaded guilty in the Georgia case. They pleaded down to practically nothing because they cannot afford. And there was the one woman, I don't remember her name, young, she worked for Trump. She said, I can't afford this. I'm going to plead down. She didn't go to jail. None of them went to jail for anything. They pleaded down so far.
Joe, we're going to have to give you the last word.
They don't really want them, but they do want Trump. So they had to have the RICO. So they had to have a conspiracy. So you have to have more than one person for a conspiracy.
Joe.
So he gathered up.
Joe, I'm sorry. We're going to have to give you the last word. We've got a break to take, and we have another caller.
Here's one quick for Tom. Hey, they're delaying, I think, the building of that chip factory in Ohio, and that was one of the things that Tom was proud of, that the Biden administration got going. And the whole reason, I think, I don't really know much about it, but go ahead, let Tom go, and I think it's the regulations that entangle them,
but
they can't make a profit because of the government.
Okay,
all right.
thank you, Joe. Appreciate your call. Thank you, sir. Dale, you're on the mark. Good morning from Sunbury. Dale? Earth to Dale.
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah.
You're on.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think about the four states out west eliminating practicing law with the bar association? You don't need to pass the bar to practice law. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm not familiar with it.
Don't you think that's the first dominoes that are falling? Don't you understand people are understanding common sense now?
Well,
more illegal.
There was a time, and I don't know that you can still do it, but you could read law. You didn't have to go to law school, but you did have to pass the bar exam.
They're practicing law now. You don't need to pass the bar.
Oh, you don't? Huh? So
no, that makes all our local attorneys who don't stick up for the people, who are continue the path of helping government, are going to all be ambulance chasers now. It's a shame because, a lot of them are good people and they have families, but now they got to chase ambulance again. So,
Well, how does something that happened in the western part of the United States affect people here?
Because two more states do it, boom, the bar is done. That's why I was telling you the super firms are going to destroy the whole system, and that's what they did. The whole system's now it's make up laws as you go. Anytime you step in court, if the judge tells you got to pay restitution, even a dollar, I would reject it and tell them I want to appeal it to a higher court, because you'll never have to pay a dollar restitution again, because laws make up as you go. That's what I was telling you, and you don't never listen. You just defend the Bar Association all the time. I told you, the super firms are going to destroy the whole system. And that's what they did, Joe.
Well, full disclosure,
firms are refusing to pick up for the people.
Full disclosure, I have worked with the Bar Association.
That are written, not make up as you go. So when these small firms continue to take the side of the federal government, you can say goodnight, goodbye. The domino fell.
Dale,
you know,
I have worked with the Bar Association for almost 25, 30 years on their Judicial Review Commission, the investigative division investigating candidates for judge. I know you don't believe it. Let me finish. I know the Bar Association takes trying to find highly qualified judicial candidates very seriously. The people I've worked with at the Bar Association are not cretins. They're not stupid. They are intelligent people who are trying to do the very best they can to assure that their profession holds the highest ethical standards. Now, I don't know what fault you find with that, but I don't find any.
I find it more being extortion and embezzlement because there's laws that they make up as they go.
They don't make any laws.
When you prey upon the vulnerable and the weak and the poor, the system's not going to hold. That's where we are right now.
The Bar Association is not a legislative body. They don't make rules that the rest of us follow. They make rules that attorneys have to follow.
They make up rules as they go, Joe. You know, the whole system's corrupt.
Well, I don't
buy
it.
And the law, you know, they can't be too specific about what laws are enforced.
Okay.
They just try to give you gibberish. And I'll take down any cop lord you got. I'll tell you. Because all they're going to do is come up with code words. That's all done. People woke up. It's done.
All right. Hey, thank you. Dominoes
are falling. If two more states follow lead, it's done.
Dale, appreciate your call as always, sir. Thank you, and you've given us something to think about. We have to take a break, and we'll be right back with more of On the Mark. The phone lines are open, 570-743-9565.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The all-new Shimox Furniture World in Mount Carmel has everything you need to refresh your home. Enjoy three stories of beautiful furniture, mattresses, and accessories, including all of the latest colors and styles, and all in a hassle-free environment. Our staff would love to help you find the perfect piece, and we know that we have the best prices around. And as always, get that awesome Shimox service with free delivery, free setup, and free removal of your old. Come visit us at Shimox Furniture World, where we've been serving our community for over 100 years. It's all new in Mount Carmel, selling happiness since 1915.
Okay, welcome back on board On the Mark. I'm Joe McGranahan. 570-743-9565 is our hotline number. Our comments this morning have generated a lot of emails and texts, which we'll get to. It says, this one's interesting, and it's well-written, and it's very thoughtful, and I'll pass it along, even though it's somewhat critical of me, and I accept that. It says, good morning. I fully believe that you, Joe, are reasonable with high moral standards, and as much as I don't agree with many of your stances, particularly the direction of the Republican Party, I respect them as well informed. I truly struggle with your normalization of Trump's tactics, lack of decorum, and criminal civil cases. You can strongly state and believe that his policies will be better for the nation, while also recognizing that none of this is normal and that the precedent may be damaging our country for decades to come. Populism, especially this brand of national populism, is beyond dangerous to the foundation of this country and its political processes. Signed by Josh. Josh, I have often said that I do not agree with Trump's tactics, his lack of decorum. As for the civil criminal cases brought against him, many of them I think were politically motivated. You know, they've cost the man a lot of money. They've gone after his ability to do business, and I don't think they're fair. In the documents case, they prosecute him. They didn't prosecute the other people involved when they even said they could have. So I think President Trump has created a lot of his own problems. I think that some of what he says is bad for the country. I mean, he really should engage his brain before he puts his mouth in motion. And he should have served when he realizes he's saying something provocative, as he did with the bloodbath comment, he should make sure that he qualifies it at once so that the media can't go after him. In any event, I'm sorry that, you know, I do think that Trump's policies were good for the country. Whether Trump's good for the country or not, that's another matter. You'll have to decide that at the ballot box. And one of our other emailers says, yes, Chris, there is in fact video of Antifa changing into pro-Trump gear in bushes close to the Capitol building. You just don't want to see it. Just like you don't want to see the hours and hours of video of what really happened that day. Then Chris says, if there is a video of it, then take it to the FBI. You mean the same FBI that had agents all throughout the crowd stirring things up that day? The FBI doesn't care about other videos put there from January 6th because they were absolutely part of the setup that day. And that is signed by Doug. Okay, Doug, that's your comment. And let's see here. We have another one. All right. I thought I had another one here. Let me find them. Oh, we have one from Tom. I knew Tom was in here somewhere. Okay. But this isn't from him. And this one says, Chris continues his far-left rants, never wants to hear a contradictory opinion of his own, and still tries to twist and turn and belittle any thought that differs from his. I didn't realize that the far-left had such a squeaky, clean, and above-board character. And let's see here. This is another comment on another matter, and we'll get to this one now. They used to get about $100 a day. This is for the election workers, and they weren't elected. They were just asked to serve. Isn't the judge of elections elected? I think so. Tom, I knew Tom had a comment here. He said, it was proven with the arrest of the last fake informant that the Hunter Biden laptop never existed. Get your act together. Tom, what alternate universe are you living in? Everybody now recognizes that the Hunter Biden laptop was, in fact, real. Come on, Tom. Get with it, buddy. And our texts. One says, this is, I guess, a response from Stan to Chris. Chris, I did not say I saw a film of the Antifa changing clothes. I said I saw someone that witnessed them doing it. That's a big difference. And yes, Chris, Biden is selling the country out, and you support him. What's that say about you? Okay. And then another one says, oh, Chris, you have the TDS bad. Manafort's conviction had nothing to do with Trump. Hunter was and is doing exactly what Manafort was convicted of. Another texter says, Georgia solved the ID accessibility problem by sending mobile ID centers around the state. It can be done if there's a will to do it. And then another texter says, there are 106 photo ID centers in Pennsylvania and plenty in the Philadelphia area. Not a problem to get a photo ID. Okay, the hotlines are open, 570-743-9565. We'll take our final break of the day. We invite your calls.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Ready or not, here comes spring and all the work that comes with it. So now's the perfect time to get a tough tractor that's ready for anything this season can throw at it. Right now, you can get 0% or save thousands on select models during the Mahindra Spring Sales Event. Go to MahindraUSA.com to see all our deals and to find a local family-owned dealer near you.
Save yourself some work this spring. Hurry to the Mahindra Spring Sales Event going on now at Hilly Ridge Sales and Service, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Elysburg Road, Danville.
Okay, welcome back on board. On the mark, 570-743-9565 is our hotline number, and we have time for one or two more calls if you get in quickly. One of our emailers that I didn't get to, this was sent in last night, and it revolves around January 6th. It says, greetings, Congressman G.T. Thompson, in January of 2020, released the following statement regarding the Capitol incursion. Quote, I unequivocally support the right to peacefully assemble, but what occurred today at the U.S. Capitol was senseless, violent, and destructive, and counter to American values. My staff and I are safe thanks to the efforts of the Capitol Police, who have been working tirelessly to reinstate the peace. This was a sad day for our nation and totally unacceptable. That's the end of the quote. Then our writer goes on to say, recently, the apparent Republican presidential nominee has stated that those arrested on January 6th are hostages and expressed his intention to pardon these patriots on the first day that he returns to office. Congressman Thompson's constituents deserve to know if he still stands by his 2020 statement or if he now concurs with his leader that those arrested are being treated so unfairly as the apparent nominee contends. And that's a comment. We will certainly pass that on to Congressman Thompson's office and see whether or not they have a comment. But yesterday, I wanted to get back to this, the story out of Washington. In a debate Monday at the Supreme Court challenging the Biden administration's alleged coordination with big tech to censor certain messages, one justice raised eyebrows in her comments about the government's relationship with the First Amendment. The case stems from a lawsuit brought by Republican-led states Missouri and Louisiana that accused high-ranking government officials of working with giant social media companies under the guise of combating misinformation that ultimately led to censoring speech on topics that included Hunter Biden's laptop, COVID-19 origins, and the efficacy of face masks, which the states argued was a First Amendment violation. In nearly 2 hours of oral arguments, the justices debated whether the Biden administration crossed the constitutional line, whether its outreach efforts with private companies amounted to permissible persuasion or encouragement versus illegal coercion and threats of retaliation. Dick, you're on the mark. We'll give you what time we have left, sir. Good morning.
This won't take long. I read a little bit about what the thing on the bar exam. In five states, basically because of the pandemic, there were lots of issues with people taking the bar. I'm paraphrasing this. So they had ways of not circumventing it, but they made these students almost jump through hoops to get a license. And right now, all five of them are back giving the bar exam. You have to take a bar exam again. This is Oregon, Wisconsin, New Hampshire. But you could practice law, but it wasn't just because you went to law school. And they made you jump through a hoop to do this. And the other thing is, in 2026, there's supposed to be a national bar exam. Now, whether that'll be recognized by every state, who knows that?
What will the national bar exam guarantee you, that you can practice before
the
federal
courts? I don't
know.
That was part of the article. It just said in 2026, they're going to try to have a national bar exam. Now, whether every state will recognize that bar exam, I have no idea. There's no such thing as a national firearm license or a national driver's license. So I don't know what will happen there.
Well, but my point
being is that during the pandemic, there were issues with people taking the bar exam.
Right.
And now I can understand there were lots of issues over that. So states went around ways of getting people that went to law school practice law, but it wasn't as simple as just, I went to law school, let me practice law in a courtroom. But I mean, you had to actually work with law firms. You had to do a bunch of stuff, and every state made it different.
Did they actually have requirements? I mean, if they did away with the bar exam, did they actually have some kind of requirement?
You had to go to law school. You just couldn't walk off the street. But my point being is every state had a different format to let you practice in a courtroom. Sometimes you had to go practice in the courtroom with a you know, you had to perform in a courtroom in law. You had to practice in front of the judges and everything to actually, you know, be recognized.
Okay.
You have to read the article. It's kind of interesting, but I can't summarize the whole article.
Right. Okay, Dick, I'm sorry we're out of time. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow in WKOK Sunbury on the Mark.